Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Aaron Judge, he puts them in the front with the home run last night like he's done all season long. He's played incredible defense all year. He's one of the few Yankees that actually understands how to run the bases, because you're not a very good base-running team. And he just does everything well, and he's just a team guy. I mean, talk about a guy that is deserving of all. And he bet on himself this year. Remember, he bet on himself. I'm not going to take that contract. I think I can get more money. And has he ever made it pay off? Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com, Ford, Kia, Hyundai. Best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Boy, those warranties, they save you money over time. They do. Now, your budget may say a pre-owned vehicle. Okay? Well, they've got an incredible selection of pre-owned vehicles, all with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. So important. And a great service department that just flat out gets it done. That's why they need more technicians. And get in contact with them. You want a career change, or you're in the business, you're like, you want to work for great and with great people, do that. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Now, Matt, if you could do me a favor here, I'd appreciate it. If you could get a paper bag so you can breathe into it, that way you don't have to hyperventilate as we play our play-by-play call of the day.
And the payoff. There goes the deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 61. He ties Roger Maris for the American League single-season record with 61 home runs. It's a two-run Judgian blast. Here comes the judge. A two-run blast, and the Yankees take a 5-3 lead on number 61 for Judge.
Tres, Meiza Lenza, Judge, batazo, profundo por el... Olvídala, esa se va, se va, se fue, la número 61 se fue. Muévase un poquito, Roger Maris. Hay otro que se quiere sentar en la mesa. El juez, Aaron Judge, culpable de empatar el récord de los Yankees, de empatar el récord de la Liga Americana. Llegó al norte de la frontera, Aaron Judge, el número 61. Los Yankees se van adelante 5-3. Y Judge empata a Roger Maris.
John Sterling and Ricky Ricardo with the calls in English and Spanish on the Yankees networks last night. And both great calls. Meanwhile, Matt has been breathing in and out of a bag.
God, I love Ricky Ricardo.
It's a great call. It's a great guy, and I knew what he was saying. So it's a great call. Now, my point is, I'm not saying that steroids don't play a role. Yes. Okay? But you have to also do this on a fact-based basis. You can't do it on an assumption basis. So, did Barry Bonds ever test positive for steroids? I'm just asking on a fact-based basis, not on an assumption basis, not on a my gut feeling tells me basis, but did he? And the answer is no, he never did, because they didn't have, okay, they didn't have testing then. Okay, Mark McGwire, Andrew in the locker. Right there, everybody can see it. Was Andrew a banned substance in 1998? No, but nobody ever talks about this. You got to talk about this in a fact-based thing. You can't do it in a, well, according to my creed. I'm like, I have to, like, excuse me, you know, go lecture somebody else. But that's my point. Just simple. When we talk about, like, oh, you know, he's clean, so he's the all-time. And, well, what rule was Mark McGwire breaking in 1998? Which rule? Was Andrew a banned substance? No. Eventually it did become a banned substance. Was he tested? No. Okay. All right. I mean, if they're not banning it and they're not testing it, quote, those are the unfortunate, you know, I wish it wasn't the case, but those are the rules you're playing under, right? I'm just saying, those were the rules Major League Baseball had in place, and I'm not saying it's right. I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying it's right. But exactly what were they doing to stop it? Right?
Yeah, absolutely right.
I mean, I'm saying, that, again, what were the rules at the time? And again, I'm not saying it's right. But, okay.
And that's the stain from Bud Selig's tenure.
But that's the Players Association too, Matt. Don't
yes.
ever leave them out. These are always negotiated deals. They're negotiated.
Right, both sides. Absolutely.
Right? So everybody's, well, you know, okay. Right? I mean, you don't think in the NFL there were guys with steroids in the 70s? Into the early 80s? I mean, you don't think there were? Right? We aren't seeing people taking away anybody's records or making accusations. Baseball's different because of the record book means so much. But, you know, look, he's got 61. He has tied the American League record. He's one of, what, seven players to ever, one of 7 years where somebody hits 60 or more. It should be celebrated. He's going to win the Triple Crown. He's a great all-around player. He bet on himself. He's going to get a ton of money. He's going to walk in and say, I want more money in the suit, and he probably will get it.
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells founder.
The suit deliberately lives a modest life. Let's bring in Reginald Walker now. Let's go down south. Sir, always a pleasure. Great to have you back.
Steve, how are you, my man?
Doing great. There is now an opening at Georgia Tech.
Oof.
In Atlanta, they barely moved the needle, despite popular belief. They beat Georgia, yeah. Georgia, and then you can go the Falcons, whatever. The Falcons, whatever. I mean, Georgia Tech just doesn't move the needle. So, is this a golden opportunity for one of the great players in the history of Atlanta sports to return and coach named Deion Sanders?
No. I think that's a bad fit. I don't think it makes sense for multiple reasons. Look, this is I think people don't really understand what's going on here, right? We're now in the era of apparel deals and flashy things. And until about 6 years ago, they were still running around with Russell Athletic jerseys on, okay?
Yep.
Like, and most people would laugh and say that's no big deal. I'm telling you right now, to an 18 to 22-year-old kid,
that's a big deal.
Yep. And by the way, if you don't have Nike or Jordan, you better be a Notre Dame or a Texas, not that Texas is in that situation, but Notre Dame, we know, obviously, they are not a Nike program. But it's Notre Dame, so the Adidas thing, it doesn't matter, right? Georgia Tech is now with Adidas,
yeah.
But that's a factor. To right. your point, the needle is not being moved in Atlanta at all. Another point of contention there that people, I think, don't realize, they look at it and they go, well, it's a very fertile recruiting ground. Correct. But there are still a lot of kids that are from Atlanta that don't want to stay and go to school in Atlanta. And then there are a bunch of people in Atlanta that just don't care about college sports because they have the Falcons and the Hawks and all these other things, and the Atlanta United as well right now, right? The Braves are there also. You already, and then of course Georgia is on the periphery. So to try to get people to pay attention to Georgia Tech football, good luck with that. And then, oh, by the way, I'll use my, yes, I do have a degree from Penn State, but it ain't that easy to get into Georgia Tech.
No, it's tough. No, it's one of the great engineering schools in the country. There's no question.
Absolutely.
A gorgeous campus. I've done many basketball games there in my career. But, I mean, this idea, they're in Atlanta. That's why, yeah, the Big Ten should expand there. Get Georgia Tech. To do what?
Here's what I'll...
To do what? The needle doesn't move.
It doesn't move. Hey, Steve, let me pile on even further. And I know this is a little bit of a different sort of example. Kennesaw State and Brian Bohannon, that's a program that's not even 15 years old.
Right.
They've done nothing but win 10 games in Kennesaw, which is right outside of Atlanta.
Yep.
And when they're 9-1 and beating people, and granted, they were playing an option, they run the option as well, they can't get 5,000 people to show up.
Right.
And they've got 30,000, like something like 20 or 30,000 students. They don't care in Atlanta.
No. It's a University of Georgia city.
Yep.
Falcons are probably second. Then you start talking about the Braves and others. I mean, you're way down the line. And not only that, the person that takes this job, Jeff Collins, I don't know whether he's a great coach, a good coach from 30,000 feet, because I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know the Georgia Tech landscape in terms of, but all I know is that you go from the triple option to then having to retool the program. Oh, and by the way, do it during a pandemic. I don't think that's an easy job.
He, in my opinion, now in 3 years, let's say whoever shows up tomorrow and takes that job, and in 3 years they're winning 10 games a year. I don't think people understand. Jeff Collins did the hardest part of that job, which is being right after the guy that ran the option, because he had to turn over the roster. You look at Sims at quarterback, I think that's a high-level player. That's a guy that if coached right over the next year or two can play in the National Football League. He's going to need some development, but he's got a lot of talent. Jeff Collins did some really good things there, but that job is not as easy as people think, and you can't just go snatch guys out of the transfer portal and bring them to Georgia Tech, because as we talked about, it's not that easy to get in there.
And not only that, but I mean, people think, well, because it is an economic center of the South, and it is. And NIL's great there, and that's not the case. Okay, they don't have great NIL deals down there. They just don't. I mean, it doesn't relate to the young people that are going there.
Any business in Atlanta is doing a deal with the guy that plays for the Falcons or the Hawks
That's
or the
right.
Braves or the Atlanta United. They're doing a deal with anybody but Georgia Tech football players.
Right. And people don't realize that. I think people make assumptions and they don't understand the reality on the ground.
They better figure it out.
Well, I mean, at Georgia Tech, they're trying to figure it out. But I'm talking about the average fan. Like, oh, hey, expand, go to Atlanta. Do what?
No, that's not.
It's not going to happen. Come on.
Georgia Tech is not getting any extra eyeballs on television sets.
No.
That's what all of this expansion's about at the end of the day anyway.
Exactly. It's about brands, right? That's what it comes down to. College sports is about brands, about the front of the jersey, and then we can talk about the back of the jersey later. I mean, you know down there, what's the brand of North Carolina and Duke basketball down there? Come on.
That's it. Steve, I made the joke. I went to a local establishment on the first Saturday of the season. Now, granted, I had a game on Thursday night and Friday night, so it allowed me to do that.
Yeah.
So I walked into an establishment on Saturday. ECU was playing NC State. North Carolina's playing App. And mind you, this is an ECU team that everybody said, oh, State's going to lose that game. They're going to get upset in that game. And everybody's going, oh, hey, App is right for getting North Carolina. I walk into a local establishment, and there are like seven people in the place at noon when both of those games are kicking off.
Yeah.
Those people in this city do not care. You can go watch a Duke Carolina basketball game in the middle of February, and you can't walk in the local establishment. And I'm not talking about from the parking lot. I'm talking about from the main street to get in the parking lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's the way it is. I do have to ask you about NC State football. You got a big game with Clemson this week.
Yes.
Interesting game. So what's your thought? NC State's ranked 10th. They haven't won the ACC title, I believe, since 79. which, by the way, Penn State on a Herb Menhart field goal beat them down there from 54. And it's a great call by Fran, by the way. Fran Fisher made an awesome call in that play. What kind of shot do you give them in this game, considering how Clemson is playing, how DJ's played to this point?
I think NC State has more than a puncher's chance in this game, and I think the reason why is because Devin Leary doesn't generally make mistakes with the football.
I give him credit. He is a good quarterback. Leary is a very good quarterback.
He's a good quarterback, but what I love about NC State in this game, because what I think it's going to come down to, Steve, there's going to be some third down situations where DJ's going to look to throw the football and he's going to have to take off and run. Because it's not going to be there. And these three linebackers, Drake Thomas, Peyton Wilson, and Jalen Scott, those three guys, I think, have the ability to be able to account for DJ if he does need to take off or if he does decide to take off. And I think that's going to be the key in this game. Now, if Clemson starts going five wide receivers, Dave Dorn's going to have to make a decision. But I think as long as two of those three linebackers is always on the field, they've got somebody with those guys, that their level of experience, their athleticism, they've got somebody that can account for DJ if he has to take off when guys are not open. I think that's going to be the key to this game. If they can control DJ from converting, I don't know, four or five first downs with his feet on third down situations and make that number more like one or two or less, then I think NC State can find a way to win this game. If DJ's making all the throws and then all of a sudden he starts running around as well, because I think his level of confidence is way up right now, obviously with the last few games, that's going to be key. It seems, and I can tell you this from being down here, the weather seems to be improving in terms of the prognosis of the weather, so it may not be as bad. When I looked, and Clemson's about 2 hours southwest of me, and west being the key point in that, because if you're going west, you're not going to get as much of this hurricane remnants weather. And then, again, they're a little bit further south, so by Saturday night, it may have pulled out of that area altogether. Just the Charlotte weather, as of last night, it was saying 100% rain in Charlotte on Saturday. Now it's down to 50% last I looked. So if that's any indication, that tells you that maybe the track is going to be a little bit better in this game for both teams, and that's where I think DJ can be dangerous with his feet.
Dangerous with his feet. I mean, it seems that there are moments now where he knows what he wants to do when he gets the ball in terms of throwing it, but he still has those moments where he hesitates slightly, and that's where it costs him. Is that fair?
That's 1,000% correct. And I think, and I've always said, you've heard me say this 1,000 times. If you're thinking, you're not playing good football. It's just that simple.
That's what practice is for thinking. That's what practice is for thinking. The game is not.
That's exactly right. And I think DJ is, what I'm seeing from DJ is every game this year, you see him thinking less and less and less. And that's why I think it was so important the way that they were able to survive that overtime game, because I think that gave him more confidence that he can make some plays.
My friend, always a pleasure. I know we're going to have you on weekly. It's great for us, and we appreciate you very much.
Absolutely, anytime. And I tell you what, one of the things you and I talked about was finding out who those running backs, who that main bell cow running back's going to be. It looks like Nick and Katron are fighting for it, but that's good because one guy can have a good game 1 week and the other guy can go the next week. So I like where Penn State's going in that running game.
And they're a little different in style. You're not talking about the same guy, and that part I really like. So
absolutely correct.
My friend, thank you. We'll talk next week.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you next week.
Reginald Walker. Next half hour, Rob Beard Temple on Major League Baseball. We'll talk with him. Phillies right now with that half-game lead over the Brewers in the wild card race. And Gene Sikora faked out today. That's always a lot of fun. Cubs lead 2-0 top of the seventh at Wrigley. Off day for the Yankees and Aaron Judge, so America can now properly concentrate on the Dolphins and the Bengals. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Tough baseball final half hour. But the name Aaron Judge actually will not be brought up. That's. We'll actually talk about other things. There's more to America than New York. I know that hurts to hear that.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Singleton saw what I saw. Oh, I'm sorry. No? Not the right way to go about it?
Probably not, I guess.
No. Just kidding. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Very quickly, on Bonds and McGuire, I've kind of left Sosa out of this because McGuire hit 70 and Bonds hit 73. I'm not sitting here saying that I don't have deep suspicions. I'm not sitting here saying it doesn't make me a little uneasy, right? But I'm saying, what are the facts? And the facts are, at the time, was there testing? No. Okay. At the time, was Andro not on the banned substance list? It wasn't. I mean, it's like, those are facts. Right? They make you uneasy, but that's Major League Baseball, and the Major League Baseball Players Association did not come to an agreement on this, and because they didn't, they allowed certain things to happen. How about that? Aaron Judge is not in that boat. With that, we bring in Rob Beertemple, who would rather talk football than baseball. Rob, great to have you with us.
Well, I got to tell you, I think the punter had a hell of a game last weekend. But
he did.
He did. He was outstanding. I mean, Barney. I'm sorry, Barney.
Barney Amore.
Yeah, what a great. I mean, the rest of the guys. I don't know. It was kind of a combination, I think, of maybe they were trying to do too much. I think they made that game harder than it had to be, even though they had dumbed down the playbook, it looked like.
Yeah.
But they were just a lot of personnel moves and early in the game. And I thought, just put the game away first and then,
yeah,
you know. But hey, it's a win. 1-0, baby.
Yep. And 4-0 overall.
Yeah. Yes,
I will say this about O'Neill Cruz, and I was talking about this earlier, Rob. You know, mm-hmm. It takes a while sometimes to get into your own groove. But his batting average is up 33 points from his low water mark. And he's done that in about a month to 5 weeks. Are you now seeing a level of consistency with him that is starting to develop at the end of this year?
Yeah, I think consistency and also, I guess you could say, adaptation. He's finally, you know, taking himself. I mean, you know, you go to the plate with a game plan and an approach, and that has to change. Sometimes you're down 0-2, or if the pitcher is consistently throwing breaking balls away and, you know, out of the zone, you just can't keep hacking at him and expecting, you know, something different to happen. But he is finally, I think, kind of realizing adjustments need to be made in each at bat and is making them. I mean, a great case a couple nights ago, I guess, maybe it was Monday night. He had that little, you know, they shifted on him, and, you know, there was that huge hole on the left side of the infield, and he kind of shortened up his swing a little bit, and kind of had an excuse me, you know, 37-mile-an-hour dribbler, but it went for a single.
Yeah.
I was talking to him about that last night. I was like, you know, is that the softest single you ever hit?
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, it is. It is. But that's what you got to do sometimes. I mean, I think that's really – yeah, he's got the sexy exit velo, and you know, and he can throw the ball a million miles an hour, and he can run, and all this, puts balls in the river. But I think what's going to make him a great player, if that's where it ends up, is just the ability to do those little things, to recognize when you can take that dinky little single, but you know, and eventually turn that into a run maybe, or later in that game. He was on first base, and I think Reynolds hit a fly ball to left field for the third out. But he was, you know, hauling butt around second base into third like it was a double off the wall. I mean, stuff like that that you got to do that, you know, it's easy to look past it in a game. But those little things are, in my mind at least, those are the separators.
And no question, because I look at, for example, a guy like Josh Donaldson. Right, he ends up in a double play the other day, and he's carrying his bat down to first. And the Blue Jays botched the play up, and they still got him because he was jogging down to first. Like, I'm sorry, but that's the example you're setting for your younger guys? And I see a guy like Cruz busting his tail around the bases. That shows me a lot.
Yeah, I think some of that, you know, I mean, it probably there's been some talking. You know, I think we can scratch probably. There's been some talking, you know, in the dugout and in the clubhouse, you know, from management about the need to really bear down. And because we've seen a lot just over the past 2-3 years with this club, you know, guys eating seeds on the field,
right,
the plays unfolding directly in front of them, or guys who take their personal communication devices perhaps onto the field. You know, I mean, just stuff like that. You can't afford to do that when you're on a pace to lose 100 games. And I think the idea of, like, really bearing down has been hammered home with these guys. And on the one hand, yay, because that's a message that needs to be sent and it's needed to be enacted upon. But also, like, I mean, damn, you're in the major leagues now.
Yeah.
You think they would know that. But here we are.
Does Derek Shelton manage this team in 2023?
He's under contract, and I believe he will.
Okay.
Beyond that, I don't know. I mean,
Rob, I am not in any way, shape, or form blaming him. I just, and you and I have had this conversation before. I couldn't tell you in a million years whether he's a good manager. He's never managed a meaningful game in his career.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, people point to the breakdowns, I guess you could say, like a breakdown of discipline, if you want to call it that. In different little ways, whether it's fundamental plays being botched or just stupid mistakes, bad optics, you know. And you could lay some of the blame at his feet, and to a degree, deservedly so. But a lot of that stuff starts at other levels of the system. And, you know, this is something I was having lunch a couple of weeks ago with a group of scouts. And I love doing that because you learn so much.
Yes.
I just sit there and shut up and let those guys talk, and it's fabulous. And a couple of them were telling me that, you know, they had heard about several teams, but the Pirates in particular, where it you know, the coaches and the development staff is kind of sort of being told that, you know, ease up on the discipline stuff and you know, on the, you know, my way or the highway stuff, and just let the players kind of be the players. Because, you know, I mean, when Ben Cherington was hired, there was a lot made. It's a player-centric approach that they're taking. And Neil Huntington and his lieutenant, Kyle Stark, in particular, really ran the minors like a boot camp.
Right. No, I know.
Yeah.
I saw it here.
And that was way too far. The pendulum had swung. But now it's really swung back the other way. And, you know, you hear stories about, well, you know, I know, like in Altoona this year, I've been there in the dugout before games talking to guys. They have like a heavyweight boxing, like, championship belt thing sitting there that, you know, in the dugout that I guess is part of like a home run celebration or whatever. And I believe Low A Greensboro last year had some kind of crown or something the guys would wear. And I don't know. I mean, Yeah, I have no problem with enjoying the moment and celebrating a great play or something. But at the same time, I think there's a coach that we both dealt with in the past that said, "Africa, you've been there before."
Right. Yeah.
And that's kind of how I approach it. And but maybe I'm just an old man shouting in the wind. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I think there has to be a balance between the two. I want you to have fun. It's your game. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have to have a perspective on what you're having fun about. You know, are you having fun because you just did something to win? Or are you just celebrating an individual accomplishment? And to me, there's a big difference between the two, and there's too much celebrating of individual accomplishments that are not leading to wins.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just my opinion. If your individual accomplishment leads to winning, man, I'm the first one to celebrate it because, hey, quote, we don't win without you. But at the same time, if it's just an individual accomplishment, the final score was 12-2 and you had two home runs, I'm not jumping up and down. It meant nothing.
Yeah. It's you're right. It is a fine line, and you know. I guess it just because it leads to problems. I mean, you know, there's another team on the field, and if you're watching, you know, that stuff unfold, you know, now maybe if you're a pitcher or whatever, you get a little honked off, and maybe one of those fastballs comes in a little bit more, you know, than it maybe normally would, and now maybe your catcher gets hit on the wrist and has to sit for a couple of months,
right?
You know, and maybe he's your former first-round pick, and that's very unfortunate. But, you know, so, I mean, there's just ramifications to everything. And so enjoy the moment, but, geez, let's have some perspective.
You spent a lot of time looking at Altoona this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're looking at the individual prospects. But there's always a little bit more to me than just that. Because are the individual prospects coming together that are actually leading to wins? Because you're in the double A, and they're okay. I mean, they're five games over 500.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, but how do you gauge that?
It is a little tricky in some ways because, I mean, I expected a little bit more from that club production-wise. In part because, you know, management has said that it wants to keep guys kind of clustered so they kind of move through the system, better guys, the core guys, keep them clustered so they can kind of, you know, move through the system together and experience winning together, whether that's a playoff series or a
right.
championship.
I agree
whatever.
With that. I agree and with that.
Yeah, I like that approach as well, but that also kind of puts the impetus then on, okay, then we'll then produce.
Yes.
And sometimes, I think we saw maybe, you know, I saw it in previous years. Maybe, I don't know if it's, I still haven't really kind of decided if it's the case this year or not. I think with Altoona, it was a case because they had a lot of extenuating circumstances. But sometimes you see guys get caught up in that, you know, trying to get to the majors or trying to the individual stuff. And it kind of falls apart a little bit team-wise. This year, everybody was freaking hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Gorski was hurt and Hank Davis was hurt and Gonzalez was hurt. You know, their pitcher, I mean, Priester started the year on the IL. So they had a lot of guys dinged up and nicked up. I don't know how many, you know, maybe a handful of times they had everybody back in the lineup, you know, and it was good, but it was kind of a herky jerky kind of year in a lot of ways. And I think if some of that the moving guys through and having them stay together and be successful together, you know, it just wasn't. It's a good plan, but the circumstances kind of, you know, prevented it from happening this year. And you wonder where do you go from there now? You know, a lot of those guys, I would assume, would be up at Indy next year, Triple A. Yeah. A couple of them, I think, we're going to see in Pittsburgh. I think a guy like Andy Rodriguez.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, he's I've been told he's on the Pirates' internal depth chart.
Yeah.
He is ahead of Henry Davis now. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean necessarily that everybody thinks Henry's going to have a bigger, better Hall of Fame career. Yeah. It just means that he's tracking, because some of it is Henry was hurt, and he was hurt last year too.
Yeah.
Henry has just been consistently good and hasn't been impeded by injuries or anything else. And, he's just tracking on his career arc has been smoother at this point. So we'll see how that ends up. I think it, could be a great problem for the Pirates in a couple of years if Hank and Andy are both there at the same time. Assuming they're both still with catcher too. But a lot of pluses from that season. I saw a lot of really good things. Ortiz had an eye-opening year. I think Peguero did pretty much what everybody expected Peguero to do. So we'll see if, next year everybody will be a step closer, and we'll still kind of be waiting for that window to open in Pittsburgh some decade.
Rob, the regular season should be actually over today. But because of the lockout, it'll end next week. They'll end up playing 162. I'm looking back on all this, Rob, and I'm seeing where the Pirates are, and I see, obviously, the Habs with the money. Exactly what was accomplished by the lockout?
To a degree, I think that the union had a chance, if it really would have hunkered down, to maybe enact some of the things that it wants, and it didn't. I've had players tell me that they thought guys caved too soon. I think the owners knew exactly what they were doing. They were going to lock them out and just let time be the decider in the whole thing. And it got to the point where players, you're not playing, you're not getting your paychecks, you're getting a little antsy.
That part I understand, but tonight the Cincinnati Bengals will play the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
The Bengals went from having the first overall pick in the draft and consistently drafting in the top five to the Super Bowl last year. That can't happen in Major League Baseball under the current system. And that's my point. What was accomplished with the lockout if you're not going to have competitive balance? I mean, don't players want to be seen in something that's exciting and in a pennant race?
I think, there's a lot to unpack there. I think some of it is baseball. You look at the ways baseball is changing. I think it's trying to make itself, or if not more popular, at least maintain its popularity. But it's going about it in ways that are like supposedly quick and easy fixes. Like, hey, pitch lock, no more shift, replay challenge, instead of like just saying, there's this team in Pittsburgh that hasn't won since, I was in high school.
Yeah.
Or there's a, team in Cleveland that hasn't won.
Right.
And although, the Guardians are one of the great stories from this year winning that Central, but it was a pretty, let's face it, the AL Central is a pretty bad division.
Yeah, it sure is.
So I think it's almost like, pay no attention. It's like we say sometimes when we're sitting there at Pirates games and, you're watching the broadcast and they're talking about, the minor leaguers or they're getting some food from one of the concession stands in Milwaukee or something. And it's like, pay no attention to that product on the field.
That's right. Right.
And I sometimes get the sense that's what baseball is doing, is it's creating sideshows to – to a degree too, there's always been some disparity in the sport. I mean, the Yankees have been good forever. And, it was in 1960, it was like David and Goliath when the Pirates beat the Yankees. I mean, it happened.
Yes.
But it was still an aberration. I mean, and things haven't gotten better for competitive balance, but that's kind of like the way the game is. If you buy a major league team, if you own it, you got to understand the economics of the way things are run. So, either you work within that system and just accept the way things are, or you try to find ways that you can game that system and work around it and find your own advantages. And, some teams do that, and a hell of a lot don't, because they still put a product in the field, and it's still baseball, and it's entertaining if you want to go out with the kids on a Thursday or Friday night in July, and that's that.
Again, but you have teams that don't want to do that. I mean, I would have sat there, and it would have been shot down, and said there'll be a floor of $100 million and a luxury tax, and pick a number in the 200 somewhere, right?
Yeah.
That way it would appease the players on luxury tax because there's no cap. It's a luxury tax. Mm-hmm. And the floor would have forced them to spend money. But you have a block of teams, Pittsburgh among them, that won't do it. And again, you got to care about what you're doing here, and they don't care about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just, there are subsets within both sides there. I mean, the players, there's the upper echelon of guys, and there's the vast middle class of players. And then there's the younger guys, and everybody is there's so many competing interests there that it's enough to keep just enough division for them not to be able to fully get behind something. And in the ownership side, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Haves and have-nots, and there's just enough division there where they're never going to really, if you want to call it, reform the whole economic situation. And I mean, I know it's frustrating to fans, and to a degree, I mean, I don't know what to tell them. I mean, you can create...
That's right. You can't.
Create an artificial setup where everybody has, exactly $100 million to spend. And every player is a free agent after every year, and you decide how to do it. But, I don't know. I mean, that itself would create its own kind of problems and circumstances. And I don't know. I just... I mean, it makes for good conversation with fans and something, you can hope and wish and pray if you're so inclined that things turn out well for your team. But I just don't know I just sometimes wonder if you're making something that should be simple much, much more difficult than it has to be.
Mm-hmm. It's always great. It's always great talking with you, Rob. I mean, I could knock this around for 2 hours. So, because it's, I'm watching something. I love baseball, and I'm just watching it like, just slowly, like a little part goes here and a little part goes there, and it's like, come on.
Yeah, it's. This is my 28th season, and it's a lot different than it used to be, and it's frustrating. And disappointing in a lot of ways. And I used to say, well, at least I have college football to go back to, last pure bastion of amateur sports. Yeah, well, we'll see.
Maybe not. Rob, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks. And really, great work. It's not easy churning out the amount of material you do when you don't have a lot of material to work with, yet you found it. Yeah, you found it, so which is great. So.
Well, thanks, man. I will hopefully before this season's over, I'll pop over to your little outdoor broadcast and tap you on the shoulder and say hello.
I look forward to it. We're outside the tunnel now, by the way. So we moved. Rob, there you go. Thanks so much. Appreciate you, my man.
All right, Steve. Take care, man.
Rob Beard Temple, The Athletic. Bottom line is Aaron Judge has done something remarkable in one of the least popular times for the sport. No? You don't feel that way?
He's been the spot. How about he's been the bright spot of a bad time for the sport?
Well, he's not helping him. All right, so...
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
All right, back tomorrow. We'll have some fun, including the King, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.